Welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. Thank you so much, and welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. That is always fun, and I do it just for fun, folks. So that's all it's about. Anyway, just welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show, and I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you can, be a part of the show. I don't believe that we have a guest today on the show, but if we do not, that's fine. It's my show, and I can always carry my own show. Let's see what we got today. Oh, the weather. I'm always opening with the weather. And it's pretty good today. It's in Chicago. It's pretty good today. It's cold. I mean, for springtime, it's cold anyway. It's gray. It's dull. It's miserable, but it's tolerable. So I guess that's that. And also, we're having the draft is in Chicago, being the NFL draft. Yeah, it's in Chicago. It's underway as I speak right now. And the more I learn about it, I'll bring it to you, or you can just check it out yourself. Yeah, so it should be an exciting show today. We're going to talk about domestic violence that's happening to so many women. And we're going to talk about employers using social media to fire their employees. That's something. That's something. If you post the wrong kind of thing on Facebook or LinkedIn or Twitter or some other social networking media website, you could get fired. You could lose your job. Lord knows I posted... Man, I have posted so much dirt on, I mean, when I say dirt, politicians and just saying what I think on what I, gather about what's happening in the world. Some of it's not nice, but if I'd have been working for someone out there, I'd have been gone a long time ago from the things I say on Facebook. But you may not be that lucky. So I would advise a lot of people out there to watch what you say on Facebook, especially if you have a job and you need it. And, watch what you say. Do not trust your coworkers, because if you friend them on Facebook and you're working with them, and if they somehow discover that you're writing something nasty about the boss, you're writing something nasty about a coworker, you could be out of there. And a lot of times bosses are going around looking for things on social media to just fire you, just to get rid of you, because they're looking for it. A boss is even when you go to an interview, you have, if you go to a job interview and you're sitting across the desk from the guy or girl, that's a woman or man, guy or girl sometimes, and they're interviewing you and they're looking at your resume as they're asking you questions. That person that's interviewing you, they are trying to find a way to say, don't call us, we'll call you. They are trying to find a way to fire you. And that's what's happening on Facebook. And I would say, if you're going to that interview, do not give them an opportunity to fire you. Give them an opportunity to hire you. Because that's all it's about. That's all it's about. They're looking for ways to fire you, even on Facebook. And you get some bosses, some supervisors, and even managers trolling social media, Facebook, and trying to find out about you and find out what you're posting, find out what you're saying, who you're talking to. And they're going to use that as leverage to try to fire you, which is something they probably always wanted to do. So my advice to anybody out there using Facebook, if you have a job and you need your job, watch what you post. Do not, follow me or someone like me who posts anything that they want to about anybody that they want to. Because we basically, I'm not adhering to no one. I am my own man. I am, I don't work for anybody. I work for myself. I do my own thing. But a lot of people out there, who need a job to go to. And a lot of people, a lot of people are smart, because there's a lot of people I've known throughout my life, and they work, they don't post anything. You got people on Facebook, they don't post anything. They just sit back and they're your friends. They just sit back and, read what you post, but they don't post. They don't respond. They don't even click like, but they're out there. They're listening. They're looking, but they just don't say anything. Because a lot of them are afraid of losing their jobs. And then again, a lot of them may not have anything to say. You never know. So you guys watch out for that, because that's all over the media. That's all over the news. And that's what's actually happened. People do, employers do fire people for the things that they post on social media. Especially if you're bad-mouthing somebody that you work with, or you're bad-mouthing a company. And I don't think anybody would be stupid enough to do that. But there are some people who will do that. And then some people are just, companies are just, will fire you if you're bad-mouthing somebody that they don't even know. That's not even with the company. It's just that you're saying things about someone. Whatever happened to productivity? Whatever happened to the amount of work that you do? Whatever happened to experience and skills and the amount of money that you can probably save that company? They don't care about that. They don't. You can be the best employee that they have. They will fire you at the drop of a hat and take the criticism. So if you're listening, and I hope you are, watch what you post. If you're working for someone, I don't care if you're working for the government or you're working around the corner in the deli. Watch what you say, because people are looking, they're listening, and they're taking notes. I wouldn't want to see anybody lose their job because of what they post on Facebook, or they click like on something that was controversial, because you could get fired. It's unfair. It's not right, but hey. The world is changing. Technology, people are nastier than they ever been before. So, a lot of people are adhering to that, and they're not posting. Like I just said, you got thousands and, millions of people on Facebook who don't post anything. They don't post. They just sit there and listen and read what you post. I post every day, or just about every day. But a lot of people can't do that, or they're afraid to do that. And I understand they don't want to lose their jobs. I used to work with people when I did have, was out here working among folks. And, you never know when that might happen again. But I used to know a lot of people, close friends, working close with them, you know, they would never post because they were afraid to use, they were afraid that it would get back to the boss or the manager and they would be out of a job. And I would try to tell them, hey, there is the First Amendment. I mean, what are you afraid of? I'm going to lose my job. It's okay. All right. And you don't argue with people because they have bills to pay. And, you know, just be careful out there on Facebook, on media, because you can wind up unemployed. Here is another. This is another way you can wind up unemployed. And this has nothing to do with Facebook or media websites or social media. This has to do with robots. I did several shows on this, maybe one or two, on robots. And I'm going to do this again because this is very, very serious. And you have to take this serious, folks. This is already here. They are taking up jobs. I mean, in the banking industry, soon to hit the fast food industry, robots. This is scary because people are going to be thrown out of work. They are being thrown out of work as I speak. Robots. I mean, who do you think are building these cars out here? Robots. The car you drive. You know, and we have them now in the banking industry. They're going to be everywhere. And they are coming in fast. They're flying in fast from wherever they're coming from. These are robots, folks, and they will be taking over your job. As I've said in some of these other shows, robots, they don't ask for raises. They don't join unions. They don't take lunches. They don't ask for breaks. They don't ask for vacation. They don't ask for time off. They don't ask for workmen's compensation. They don't have to pay union dues. It is so many reasons to why employers are now adapting to the robot age. And I think it's awful. The young people out here, you may think you've got it made now. And if you are listening to this show, no matter who you are, people know that they are about to be replaced. And the third way you can be replaced or out of work, these awful, awful trade deals that politicians have made, NAFTA, TPP, trade deals. I mean, for example, the Nabisco company, they are taking their company out of the country, not just out of Illinois, but out of America to Mexico. Why? Because of cheap labor. A lot of companies are not just leaving Illinois, but they're leaving the United States and going overseas where they can make tons of money, because the people overseas in some of these poor countries make 25 cents to 50 cents an hour, where you once made $15 and $20 an hour. Businesses, they're greedy. They want their money. I mean, and a lot of businesses, they're hiding money overseas to keep from paying taxes in America. The only people that are paying taxes are you and me. Corporations aren't paying taxes. The rich aren't paying taxes. If they are, they're paying very little. And that's if they are at all. So times are changing. Jobs are being swept up. I mean, they are being taken away at every interval. Employers are using the social media to take your job. Robots are coming into your workplace, going to take your job. Politicians are going to be sending your job overseas. The company is going to get up and walk overseas because of cheap labor. Even Obama is in favor of TPP, Trans-Pacific Partnership, with Vietnam. And I just got through saying those people in Vietnam, they work for what? 35 cents an hour. This is why companies are leaving. And a lot of people are leaving the state of Illinois. The taxes are too damn high. I just got through talking to someone who said that they're leaving. Seriously, I just got through talking. And I didn't have to talk to anybody. I know that people are leaving Illinois. The taxes are too high. Rent is too high. Food is too high. It's just tough to live. And politicians are just as inept as they can be. They are inept. And I've been blasting Governor Rauner. You know, this guy doesn't care about Illinois. He doesn't care about public schools. Because the reason why I say he doesn't care about public schools is because he wants to take $74 million from public schools. How can you take $74 million from public schools when the schools are already strapped and broke and have no money? He wants to take whatever, and he ran as a person who cherished education. Now you see how he lied. A lot. Politicians lie all the time to get in office. He's no exception. But still in all, Illinois is in a dismal shape. I mean, we're 10 months without a budget. And if we go to 1 year without a budget, something has to be done. This guy's got to get out of office. He's not doing his job. He's wrecking his. Yeah, I agree. I think the Democrats have fiscally mismanaged Illinois. But Governor Rauner, came in and just made the situation a lot worse. That is not me saying that. That is a couple of the Chicago prominent newspapers saying that. Chicago Sun-Times and Chicago Tribune. So it's not only me saying it. I would not say anything like this without, you know, others in on with it, because, you know, they have more of a say on this than I do. But I'm just seeing this from afar. This guy, Governor Rauner, has been a dismal failure. And folks, that is a fact. He still hasn't learned that governing is all about. He don't know anything about it, governing, because he doesn't govern. He doesn't take questions from the press. He doesn't take questions from the public. Always his way or nothing. Illinois 10 months without a budget. That's ridiculous. That is ridiculous. Unemployment has risen under this guy. Instead of going down, it's risen, because a lot of the state programs that he cut funding from or shut down, a lot of people were made to be unemployed. They were out of a job. So that's one of the reasons why unemployment is up. He caused it. And there's no way in the world that somebody's going to tell me he didn't cause it. A lot of people are trying to say, well, it's Michael Madigan. It's the Democrats. They messed it up. They may have had a played a part in it, but Rauner made it worse. Put it that way. He made it worse. He made it a lot worse. Rauner forgets that he's a public servant. He goes downstate. He does photo ops with people who probably don't like him. You know. He doesn't do photo ops up here in Chicago because he doesn't like public schools. Because why? Why doesn't he like public schools? Because they are filled with union members, and he hates unions. He can't stand them. He wants to bust them. He wants to break them. He hates workman compensation. So if you get hurt on your job, you shouldn't have to go to a doctor to get well. He hates those kinds of things. Oh, he's a rich. From my understanding, Rauner is not taking a salary. He's taking $1 or something. But but his wife's taking a salary, a six-figure salary, so I'm pretty sure that's all in the family. He is no leader. And another thing I've noticed about Governor Rauner of Illinois, Governor Bruce Rauner, he doesn't mention the high crime rate in the city of Chicago. Rauner has to realize he's the governor of all of Illinois, just not just downstate Illinois, but upstate Illinois. He's the governor of Chicago. He acts like he's not the governor of Chicago. He doesn't want to be the governor of Chicago. But if you're the governor of Illinois and the city is in Illinois, you're the governor of the entire state. He hates unions, so I'm thinking he hates, because basically he hates unions. There's no doubt about that. Chicago is a union town, obviously. Maybe that's why he doesn't, want to do anything for Chicago. Maybe that's why he's trying to break Chicago. He figures if he can't get what he wants, he'd rather see Chicago go down the tubes by taking more money from it, especially from the public schools, and cutting and slashing a lot of these programs in the city that needed programs, senior programs, programs for the disabled, the mentally ill, the people with autism, domestic abuse funds, funds to, to fight crime with. He takes all of that and more away. And then when he does that, he blaming someone else. I admit Illinois was in the red, and we still are. We're deeper. He has done nothing to better this state. And the people who are supporting him, I'm surprised. Obviously, they are out of touch, or they don't give a damn. They don't care. His rich buddies, I can understand that. But he is no leader. And he can't treat this state like a business. This is a state. This is not a nursing home, Rauner. The longer he is in office, the longer Illinois will suffer. He wants bad news for Illinois. Yeah, he wants bad news. He wants to see chaos. He loves it. He thrives on it. He wants to see the state crumble and then blame someone else. This man has got to go. He's almost 2 years in office, and it's going to be almost a year without a budget. And like I've said in several shows, he planned this. Governor Bruce Rauner of Illinois, he planned this disaster for Illinois. This was premeditated. It was planned. He planned all of this. He planned on being disliked by most people in Illinois. And he is, and I've said this several times, he's not only disliked, he is totally despised. And when you're not liked, if you are a politician and you are not liked and you are despised, how in the hell can you govern? How can you do your job if people don't want you, don't like you, can't stand you? How can you do your job? He's not doing his job. And he doesn't give a damn. He's saying that Democrats are handcuffing him. Nobody's handcuffing him. Look at all the damn programs that he has cut, slashed, and burned. People are out of work. Children don't have daycare anymore. 60,000 to 70,000 state workers may not be getting paid in the coming weeks because of this damn stalemate, because he will not sign a budget. He signed a budget for the college and the universities a few days ago. But that's just going to last maybe until September, a few months from now, and then we'll be back where we were. What we need, Bruce Rauner, is a budget. We need a budget, and he knows it. This man has no legacy. He will never have a legacy. This will be his, if he makes it through his first term as governor, and he wants to run again, it's not going to happen. I'm banking that there's about three or four different people out there who are waiting to run against him, because they know he's weak, they know he's vulnerable, and they know he's no governor, and they know that he's not a leader. I'm not the only one bashing Rauner. I've been bashing him for a long time. Just about everybody who's anybody is bashing him because we love this state. It's going under. People are leaving. Our friends and neighbors are packing up and leaving the state because of the budget impasse, because of the high taxes, because of our asshole politicians. And they don't seem to give a damn. They don't seem to care. You'll never see a politician in Illinois get in front of a television camera and tell the people of Illinois that businesses are leaving. People are packing up and leaving. You'll never hear them say that. But we know it's happening. We know it's happening. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio at 625 straight up Central Standard Time, broadcasting out of Illinois. Follow me on Block Talk Radio. Follow me on Facebook. I'm all over the place. Google, LinkedIn, Twitter. I'm everywhere. We're going to be doing domestic violence, and it's going to be probably at the latter of the show, if not when I come back, because this is very interesting, folks. I mean, usually I don't pay attention to this type of thing, but I'm talking about what I'm getting ready to play for you. But this is harrowing. And victims, these young ladies are victims of guys beating on them. And I've always said any kind of abuse, any kind of physical abuse, verbal abuse should not be tolerated. It should not be tolerated. But it's going on all over the place. Some guys just think women are just made to be beat on, be treated badly, slapped, knocked down, kicked in the stomach. This is crazy. I may not be able to do much about it, but at least I'm giving a voice to it. You know what I'm saying? This is just loony. And I don't know, folks. It's just crazy. It gets my ire up. Okay, we have the smart quiz question for today. Who is the governor of your state? Do you actually think that there's a lot of people out here all around America who do not know the governor of their states? Well, we do know this. There's 50 governors. If there's 50 states in America, there are 50 governors, you know. So I would think most people would know their governor. But you know what? There are some people who don't even know who their governor is. There's people out here who don't even know who the vice president is. You got people out here who don't even know who their aldermen are or their district representative is. I mean, you got people out here who don't even know who the attorney general is. But that doesn't make them dumb. It just makes them out of touch, you know. So anyway, who is the governor of your state? I can tell you the governor of my state. I just got through talking about him. He's Governor Bruce Rauner. I mean, I had to hold my nose when I said that name. You know, I mean, he is one of the most. Yeah. Well, anyway, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. Folks, stay with me, folks. I will be right back. All right. All right, former Speaker of the House John Boehner former Speaker of the House means he's not the Speaker anymore. He's doing talk shows. Now, oh, maybe he'll do mine. But anyway, he said in an open mic in front of some students, he said that Ted Cruz, the presidential candidate, and his running mate, well, actually, he didn't say anything about the running mate, but Ted Cruz, and he called Ted Cruz Lucifer. Obviously, he doesn't like Ted Cruz, and, you know, Lucifer. But the quote that I like that he said about Ted Cruz is that Ted Cruz was a, I think he said something about that he was an honorary son of a bitch, but he did use son of a bitch. And Ted Cruz blasted back that he did not know much about John Boehner. And that kind of got me. I mean, so you don't know much about him? And he was your Speaker of the House? And you were at, and you've been senator for 8 years? Give me a break. But that's just showing folks that the Republicans are just eating their own. You know, they're eating their own. And Ted Cruz, this guy doesn't have a prayer over a prayer of being president of the United States. He's going to need more prayers because now he selected a running mate in Carly Fiorina, who is the most disliked woman in America. She brought down Hewlett Packard, a corporation, and they fired her ass. Donald Trump talked about her face. So she went and got some lip gloss and some lips. She got facelift, Botox or something. She's still hideous to me. And now she wants to run for president. I mean, this woman was all against Planned Parenthood. I mean, she lied her ass about Planned Parenthood. I think, and a lot of people think that Cruz worsened his case. He just sealed the coffin shut by, you know, with this woman. Nobody likes her. Everybody knows she's a liar. Even the media, the New York Times, the Los Angeles Times, the Washington Post. This woman is a liar as you look at her. And she just loves to bash Hillary Clinton. I admire what Hillary does every time that Carly Fiorina bashes her. Hillary does not acknowledge her. That's the perfect strategy. Hillary does not acknowledge her. Don't give her the time of the day. Because if Hillary acknowledged her, she'll say, wow, she mentioned my name. Do not acknowledge her. Let her go off on her rat-ass way because they will not be president. Cruz will not be president of the United States. Carly Fiorina will not be president of the United States. Then the only reason why Cruz picked her in a losing cause, because he felt that she was going to bring him the women vote. And most women do not like her. So he screwed up in that. And a lot of people are shaking. What the hell did he pick her for? Donald Trump swept his ass. Donald Trump won 5 states. Cruz won 0. And yet, if anybody should be picking a running mate, it should be Donald Trump, not Cruz. But it's too early in the game to be picking a vice president. But Cruz, I don't know, he felt it was ready. It was time. And then he picked somebody who nobody likes. Obviously, I'm hearing that nobody likes Ted Cruz. So I'm with Donald Trump on this, even though I would never vote for Donald Trump, but I'm with him on this. Cruz is through. It's over. Why is he picking a running mate, especially one that nobody likes, one that's a liar? And all she does is bash Hillary Clinton. And Hillary Clinton says nothing. I don't blame her. Don't even acknowledge this crazy lady. Don't give her the pleasure of mentioning her name. Because she feels as if she can get Clinton, Hillary Clinton, to mention her name, that might bring her some, might bring her or Ted Cruz some votes. So Hillary, do not mention her name. Let her talk and bash all she wants. You have this thing locked up. Don't get in a fight with a bully. You know, with a bully, because that's all she is a bully. That's why her ass was fired from Hewlett Packard. She destroyed that company. And if her ass is elected to be president, vice president of the United States, she will destroy the country along with Ted Cruz. But Ted Cruz will never be president. He doesn't have a chance. And then he goes out and picks a vice president way early in the game. Because he lost 5 states to Donald Trump. Wow, man, man. Like I said, folks, get out the popcorn. I got mine right here because it's going to be a bumpy ride. It's going to be an enjoyable ride. It's going to be like TV. I'm pretty sure somebody's, some director or some producer somewhere said, hey, we got to make a movie out of this. And it probably will be a movie someday. But right now, it's no fun, folks. This is pathetic. And Donald Trump called him pathetic. I mean, look at me. I'm mentioning Donald Trump. You know, I do think Donald Trump, if I had a choice between President Donald Trump and Ted Cruz, it would be Donald Trump. But my choice actually is a Democrat. If Bernie Sanders totally drops out of the race, we have to, as Bernie Sanders supporters, we have to support Hillary. We have to support Hillary. And we have to get out there and vote. We don't want to get another Bruce Rauner. And who cares who he endorses? I don't think many people in Illinois give a damn about who Bruce Rauner, Governor Bruce Rauner, endorses. Who cares? Who cares who Rahm Emanuel endorses? Who really gives a damn? You know, I mean, these people are just, you know, ruining the state, ruining these schools. And we're going to have a possibility. We're going to have a possible another teacher strike next month, May, around May 16th is what I'm hearing. Another teacher strike. This may, from my understanding, this may stop some students from graduating. That's a damn shame, ain't it? All these teachers get out here and do is strike, 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 strike. And the public schools are broke. Why are they asking for more money when the schools are broke? Them asking for money is going to cause the mayor to raise more taxes. And we're already taxed up our asses. They want a contract for this. They want a contract for their money's being less. The teachers in Illinois are some of the highest paid teachers in America. I know every time I'm talking about teachers, I get people calling and posting and inboxing me and emailing me saying that, you know, that I'm wrong on this. I shouldn't be bashing teachers. Teachers, give me a break. Give me a break. When the Chicago public teachers are threatening to strike every other damn month, does that tell you that they care about the kids that they're teaching? No. That tells you that they care about their own bottom line. And they already make a pretty good. The schools are broken, are broke. They don't have any money. Where do they expect the city to find the money to pay them? This weak-ass Rahm Emanuel he'll probably raise more taxes. He'll probably raise some more taxes. And that's one of the things I hate about Rahm Emanuel. He gives in to the unions. He gives in to the unions as if he cares so much about these schools. He doesn't. Stop giving in to the unions, especially if you think what they're doing is unfair, unconscionable, and just being greedy. These teachers make a lot of money. They make plenty of money. But it's a damn shame that they get out every other month or every month they're threatening to strike, and usually they do strike, and the kids are out of school. They're not learning anything. They're out of school, running the streets. A lot of teachers are out here, you know, begging for more money. And the only way they're going to get more money is through more tax hikes. And we're already being taxed up the ass, as I've said. All right, you're listening. Oh, folks, I don't know. Okay, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. We will be right back, and I'm going to have those with this domestic violence situation.
Working man in internet radio is my father, George Wilder Jr., and here he is.
All right, folks, we're back. This is called, we're back on the George Wilder Jr. Show, am I correct? Yeah, okay, I was just checking. Okay, it's 6:43 straight up p.m. in the state of Illinois, city of Chicago. I do enjoy it, believe me, or I wouldn't be here. We're going to be doing victims of domestic violence. And this is a clip that that shocked me. You know, it really shocked me, as if I didn't know what was going on. But I want you to share this show with other listeners. If they're not able to listen now, maybe they can listen later. But, you know, share this episode with a loved one, with someone that you know that have gone through domestic violence. So here we go.
Major funding for NPT Reports Domestic Violence is provided by Waller, supporting the legal needs of Nashville's business community for more than 100 years. Time and again, our clients come for the lawyer, but stay for the firm. The First Tennessee Foundation, dedicated to strengthening the vital signs of our healthy communities. The Women's Fund of the Community Foundation of Middle Tennessee, dedicated to transforming the lives of women and girls and improving the well-being of our entire community. And members of NPT, thank you.
This program contains real and dramatized violent content which may be too intense for some viewers. Parental and viewer discretion is advised.
What we hear all the time is, "You swept me off my feet." Usually they are the most charming man you've ever wanted to meet. They reel you in. I never knew anybody like him. My mother loved him. My father loved him. one of the things we talk about is push for quick involvement. You meet these guys, they sweep you off your feet, and 2 months later you're married. We have this excessive charm, and then we have the beginnings. And it's insidious. It starts slowly. I love you so much that I want to be with you every second. Yeah, I want to go to the grocery store with you. I don't want to be away from you. I love you. You're beautiful. Don't go to work. I'll make enough money. Stay home. It sounds like what we love. Women want it. We want to be loved that way. And then it turns into, why are you at the grocery store within 20 minutes? You're not going to the grocery store. It turns into something else.
In the beginning, he made me feel beautiful, young, loved, cherished, and I just, that was something that I hadn't really felt very much in my life.
It seemed like he was always there when I needed someone, always put a smile on my face when I didn't have one, when I was going through a real rough time. He was there for a shoulder for me to lean on.
When I met my husband, he was so charming. He was warm. He was very gentle. And he just catered to everything I wanted. He was romantic. I fell for that.
We're familiar with the headlines. Violent crimes happening in our community. Stabbings, shootings. However, more than half of the violent crimes occurring in Tennessee are not happening between strangers. Rather, the threats, the injuries, and homicides are being committed by the person who says, I love you. Domestic violence is not arguments that escalate out of control. It's one partner in an intimate relationship asserting control over the other. It's about power and control. Here in Tennessee, the numbers and severity are far greater than the national average. Our state ranks third in the nation for the rate at which women are killed by men and has ranked in the top five for several years. This is a public safety crisis, according to Governor Haslam, because there is no typical victim of domestic violence. Statistics tell us we all could be vulnerable.
Abusive relationships start out like all relationships. If you were going to go out with someone for the first time and they reached over and they hit you in the face, you probably wouldn't want to go out with that person again. Sometimes it's almost too good at the beginning of an abusive relationship. The person may be buying their partner flowers or calling them a lot, texting them a lot, checking in on them, and it feels really good.
Domestic violence is an escalating pattern of abuse in which one partner establishes control through force, intimidation, or the threat of violence. This relationship has predictable phases, as shown in the cycle of violence. There's a period of tension building, followed by an acute explosion, and then the apologetic honeymoon.
In an abusive relationship, the next part of the cycle after the honeymoon is what we call tension building. And that's where the partner may start to just let you know that they're in the control of the situation.
Do you want me to call in?
No, I said I'll take care of it, so I'll take care of it, all right?
They might start telling you what to wear or where you could go, who you can see.
You understand me?
Yes, I do.
They might limit the victim's control over their lives in subtle ways that the victim might not recognize right at first. And then what happens is we come to what's called the explosion or the outburst. And at that point, there may be hitting, there may be yelling, there may be screaming.
I'm really sorry.
You're really sorry. You know what's really sorry? You're really sorry.
Sorry. Who's always sorry? You're the one who's always sorry, aren't you?
If I were the victim, I might say to my partner, you know, nobody's ever done that to me before. If you do that to me again, I'm going to leave you. And then what happens is my partner says to me, oh, I'm so sorry, baby. I loved you so much. I promise I won't do it again. I won't let it happen again. Please just give me another chance. And here we are back at the honeymoon. And we may stay in that part of the cycle for a while. It could be a few minutes. It could be a few months. It could be even longer than that. Basically, the abuser is going to keep the victim in the honeymoon part of the cycle again as long as they need to keep them in the relationship.
Valerie Nguyen has worked in the field of domestic violence for 17 years. She is the founder and chief executive officer of Mary Parish Center in Nashville. In its first 9 years, the center provided a myriad of life-saving non-residential services to more than 6,000 victims of domestic and sexual violence. In 2009, the center significantly shifted its focus to become the largest single-site therapeutic transitional housing program in Tennessee. Women and their children are provided cost-free housing for up to 2 years.
The average victim takes 7 times before she leaves for good. She leaves, she goes back, she leaves, she goes back. And in the years I've done this work, I'm often asked, why? Because we love them. Because they're charming. Because they made us feel beautiful and wonderful like no one we've ever known. And because after they hurt us, they are the most contrite. And they sob and they beg. And we're the mother of their children. And we want a family. And so we go back. They'll have what we call the honeymoon phase, where everything's lovely. Then the violence starts again. And almost always it's worse than it was when she left the first time. The whole thing's escalated. And now he's going to punish you for the fact that you left.
There are occasions where our victims of domestic violence tell us that their batterer has actually taken them to the hospital for them to receive treatment, waited with them while they were taken care of, and brought them back home. And then the honeymoon starts all over again. I heard a client say once that her batterer bought her a car, and things went well for a while in the relationship after that, but she was abused again at a later time.
There was a lot of personality change for me because I tried to change the way I was because I thought I was the cause of the abuse, so if I changed the way I was, maybe he wouldn't hit me. Maybe he wouldn't scream at me or call me these ugly names that he used to call me or do the things that he used to do, and I changed a lot. I used to be a bubbly, outgoing person, and I became very depressed and sour and serious, and I lost me.
Isolation is one of the big deals. So I'm going to isolate you. But pretty much you have to think, if I wanted to have complete control over you, what kind of things would I have to do? Well, first of all, I'm going to take away your car. You're not going to have friends or family around you because I want all of your attention. You most likely are not allowed to have a job. If you do have a job, it's monitored when you leave, when you come home. All the money's given there because financial control. If I'm going to control you, I don't want you to have money. I don't want you to have gas in your car.
When I do look back, I find that there were indicators. I am very passive, and with him, as soon as I married him, his whole disposition changed with me. Immediately I became owned, and he said so right there as soon as the I do's were done. He said, now you're my wife, now you need to act like my wife. But as time went on, just little bits of comments, small areas of isolation, then complete isolation.
I think one thing we see a lot is in cell phone usage. Someone pulling the phone away and checking that phone and just kind of scrolling through and asking, who is this call from? Who is this? That's not acceptable. We have a right to our cell phones and our cell phone usage and not expect we're going to be interrogated. It's very critical to have friendships outside of the realm of that intimate partner relationship. If that person is constantly demanding all of your time and not wanting you to go out and have friends or, moreover, even have relationships with your family, then that is another example of an unhealthy boundary, and we certainly have to have those relationships. It's important for life.
We used to give out little cards to women to say the characteristics of an abuser. But before I gave out the card, I'd say, let me tell you about Joe. And I'd start telling her, you're with a garden variety abuser. And that's a very important thing to say to a domestic violence victim, because it takes the burden off her. It lets her know it wasn't you. He would have done this with anybody. You just happened to be at the right place at the wrong time. And we oftentimes see, and this is fascinating, a woman will call a woman and say, you're going out with Joe. He used to be married to me. Get away from him. He's going to hurt you. Happens all the time. And he does hurt them, which is why I end up meeting them. So we have this repetitive behavior with both the victim and the abuser.
The National Intimate Partner and Sexual Violence Survey finds 1 in 4 women and 1 in 7 men will experience severe physical violence by an intimate partner at some point in their lifetimes.
When we work with a victim of domestic violence and she begins to explain to us the dynamics and the roles that exist in their home and in their relationship, it becomes very clear that there is very rigid thinking and very unrealistic expectations and stereotypes that exist in the mind of a batter. It's very black and white. A batter often believes that that victim is there to serve them and to supply all the emotional needs and all the happiness that he feels like he deserves, or in some cases she feels that she deserves. And it's really hard to meet that mark.
A lot of times people will ask you, what did you do wrong when it comes to the behavior of your husband? And it's so easy for people to say you deserved it or you made him act like that. No. If I have to say this about myself, I was an honest wife. I loved my husband. I loved my children. I cared for everything about where we were and who we were as a family. His behavior was given to me slowly. I realized that he had issues from his past that he had not dealt with. And so I'm thinking, okay, I'll just love you out of this, you know, because I care for you just that much. And it wasn't enough. The love wasn't enough.
I couldn't understand how somebody could say that they love you and turn around and hit you. So I always felt like that it must have been something that I was doing to provoke this anger in him. His phrase with me always was, you have the most beautiful face I've ever seen. I could look at you forever. And he turned around at one point and punched me in the face and broke my nose.
My first marriage didn't work out, and, you know, so, you know, it must be me, you know. That's what I thought. It had to be me. It couldn't be both of them. It had to be me. It's not just about being hit. It's the words. It's the mean words. I'm going to degrade you until I think you are low enough. It's the money. Here, take this $20 and make it last all week. It's the children. You better not leave these children here with me. It's your sexual relationship. Forced sex. Maybe no sex. Communication with the outside world. My husband broke my phone. He ran over it. He threw it in the ditch. So when I had to call my mom or my sister, I had to beg him for his phone. And he would stand right there, listening to me talk. And of course, conversations are short, not long and laughy like they used to be, but short and quick and off. Because his thing was, nobody needs to know what's going on in my house. He started getting verbal, call a bitch, and then it just, you know, accelerate up and up and up from that, if you can only imagine, you know, being called something worse than that. You know, down, that degrades you. From the start of the abuse, I started feeling bad about myself. It was basically just go to work, come home. He had a problem because I made more money than he did.
So I used to hear that a lot in the verbal abuse. Got so physical one time to the last time that, you know, I got kicked so much in my abdomen and thrown down the stairs that I started having very bad vaginal bleeding. And I'm still dealing with that today.
You can be controlled by the clothes that you are made to wear. You can be controlled with foods that you are allowed or not allowed to eat. You can be controlled by not being able to use your own vehicle or not having access to money in the family. There are so many ways that a person can be controlled that does not include physical violence.
My husband was a burner. He would burn things. And so, of course, we would leave the house and come back and things would be broken. Things would be burned, cut, you know, and I'm questioning him, why would you do this? Why would you destroy our things? Oh, I didn't do that. And he would have no remorse.
Generally, it starts with name calling, and then it's pushing. Sometimes it's I'll throw an object, but not at you, but close to you. The messages imply it could have been you. We then move in oftentimes to animal abuse, a lot of that. Talk to any police officer who's worked a lot of domestic calls. They will tell you, you never go into a home where there's been a lot of domestic violence, where there's an old dog. You know why you never see old dogs? They don't live to be old dogs. I had a woman I worked with who had birds, and he killed every one of her birds in front of her. He never hit her. He didn't have to. He killed her birds and said to her each time, this could be you.
The harsh reality is a home with domestic violence is a threat to all those living there. 30 to 60% of perpetrators of intimate partner violence also abuse children in the household. 88% of pets living in homes with domestic abuse are either injured or killed.
On one of those days when my husband just didn't have it on right, he came home and he was upset about nothing, what I would call nothing. But because he was a drug user, he came home with a lot of paranoid mentality. And so he would come in and accuse, who's here? Where have you been? You know, things like that. And so one day I just felt like I had enough of that. And I told the kids, put your shoes on. We're going to go over to my sister's. We're going to let you cool off. And so while they are going down the hall to get their shoes, he grabs me by the neck. He does this. And all I could think about while I'm in this position is, this is going to be my last breath. I'm going to die. My children are going to come back down this hall and see me dead. And so I said, I need to try to muster up a sound. So I scream for my son. They come back down the hall. They're screaming, let my mama go. Let my mama go. I'm so tired of this. Because they had heard it. They had seen it. They felt all of this tension that was in the house. So he lets me go. And he runs outside and he slashes my tires. And I tell the kids, get in the car, we're leaving on rims. And we're screaming, I'm calling 911. He's trying to get in the car. It's a big old crazy scene of we're trying to get away from someone who's trying to hurt us. It was terrible. I hated that moment.
I had told him in the beginning it would probably be quick, and it was. And he was, we broke up over the phone. It wasn't even a breakup, you know, because it wasn't really a relationship. It was a very brief affair, I guess. It was a quick dating relationship, and he was fine over the phone. I said, you know, I told you this might happen, and he said, that's okay. And then he appeared at my apartment, and he said, I'd left a few things in your apartment. Do you mind if I get them? And I said, no. And he came up, and I was standing in the bathroom, and I was washing my face, and he was standing at the bathroom door, and he said something, and I, again, I was half asleep and watered my face. And he said, this isn't what you want to do. And then the next thing I know, I was flying through the air. And I'm telling you, I don't care how strong you are, whether you're a male or a female, when someone hits you with the full force of their weight and you are unprepared for it, there's no coming back from that. There was not even a question that I could even defend myself, because he, you know, when years later, when I became an advocate, I had to learn how to safety plan with women. And one of the things we do is we not only safety plan after they leave, we safety plan when they're in the situation. So I've walked many women through where not to be assaulted. So when you say to a woman, if you know he's getting ready to assault you, you know, back out of the kitchen, don't go in the bathroom, back into the bedroom. And that seems really counterintuitive, but the thing about a bedroom is if I throw you across the room, there's a really good chance you're going to hit the biggest thing in the room, which is the bed. So you'll be soft and maybe relatively safe. One of the worst rooms you can get assaulted in is the bathroom, because everything you hit is going to be hard, and that's exactly what happened to me. So I ended up in the bathtub, and I kept losing consciousness. And he meant to kill me. He was strangling me and was telling me, you're going to die. Like, it was clear. And I truly, honestly felt at that moment that I was going to die. I had no doubt in my mind. When I came to, he was straddling me, and I could tell by his face that he thought he killed me. And it kind of shocked him back into reality. So, long story short, I was very injured. I had several broken ribs. I had a broken nose. Blood was everywhere. You know, this is unpleasant, but it's part of the story. I had urinated during the assault, and that had mixed with blood, and I had no idea how injured I was, because it was hard to figure out. Anyway, finally I was able to escape from the apartment. And at the time, this was in the late 70s in Philadelphia, there was no domestic violence laws. So the police officers, when they came, said, well, you were dating him, yes. You were having consensual relationships with him, yes. And the cop basically said, well, be careful who you go out with next time. And that was it. Which is, there's really no way to describe how the rage of injustice that occurs when something like that happens to you. Of course, it wasn't over. He stalked me for 2 years. And I don't know how to explain what it feels like to be stalked. I can tell you that, you know, I can use those words you hear all the time about living life on eggshells. I do not have the words to tell you. I can just, you never rest. That's it. Like them. You never rest. What he did it, and now I know that it's what they all do. They take breaks. So just when you feel like, oh, it's been a month, maybe he stopped, they appear. And that's what he did. And he was great at it. He was terrific at it. He would, you know, by the time the police came, he would always be gone. They could never find him. I didn't know where he lived. It was just this ongoing, I mean, for 2 years, I've never in 2 years walked anywhere without with someone else, someone with me. To work, back to the house, back to work. I didn't go out at night. You're a prisoner. He made me a prisoner. I have to tell you that was a long time ago. And even talking to you, even now, even after all my own therapy and all my years of working with others, it still causes a sensation in my stomach. You never forget it.
Growing up in a violent home is terrifying and traumatic. This is the reality for more than 3 million children in the United States.
It's always amazing to watch children who've been around in a house with violence. They watch your hands. They study people. They're always aware of what's happening because they're used to things moving fast, literally. So they study. They read the room. It's frightening. It's frightening. It occupies a lot of their little brains when they could be doing other things. They're worried about where your hands are. And a couple really landmark studies. Here's what we know. When you have two children in a family, one is being physically abused, one is not. One is being sexually abused, one is not. The child who has witnessed the abuse, whether it be sexual or physical, will end up with more trauma than the child who's actually been abused. They will exhibit and have more long-term effects than the child who actually had the abuse. It seems so counterintuitive. How could that ever be true? Well, you add all of what the victim felt, and then you add the impotence that the child or the other person felt because they couldn't fix it. If you look at drug abuse, if you look at runaway, if you look at prostitution, if you look at suicide, you are going to see that those children come from families where there's violence. If you and I could go find 200 runaways right now in the streets of Nashville or anywhere, you will find that all of them fled violent homes. All of them.
Usually what we always do is we look to our parents to teach us not to hit. Well, if you're not learning that at home because hitting is normal at home or aggression is normal at home, then that is the culture of the family. This solves problems. This is the way that we interact. This is how you get what you want. And then you're doing it at lightning fast speed because of the behavior and the change of the chemistry within your body. I'm one of the few counselors that are willing to work with children under the age of 5. But what we've been able to look at, the recidivism rate in domestic violence, is we're always trying to recreate a relationship. If mother cannot have a healthy relationship with her partner, she can still have other healthy relationships. One of the first ways is your relationship with your child. That's the first relationship that we have in life. So when we're looking at the parent-child relationship, a lot of times counseling can be a huge component in that. When I'm working with children, very young children, I might be helping that mom learn to reparent or try different parenting techniques. Meanwhile, while trying to support that child and also understanding his or her own personal experience in that domestic violence or aggressive or violent home life that he or she might have came from. Also, what I'm looking at is repairing their relationship. Can they learn to trust one another again when they came from a situation where there's no such thing as trust? Can they also, later on in life, as teenagers, have healthy relationships? That's probably the most imperative because they didn't learn what a healthy relationship looked like. They don't understand how to problem solve without either being a victim or being an aggressor. And so they're trying to figure out how do you have conflict resolution without violence.
Domestic Violence Hotline. When victims call the crisis line, you frequently hear a sense of desperation. They need help. They are looking for someone to turn to.
Now, have you ever tried leaving before, ma'am, or even communicated to them that you were thinking about leaving?
The crisis counselors never give them advice in regards to their situation. They basically offer them options and guide them as they are making decisions about their next step.
I'm so glad that you called. You should be very proud of yourself. I know it's just a phone call, but this is a tremendous step that shows incredible amount of strength on your end. You should be very proud of yourself for making these moves. And there certainly is a vast safety net and support network that you can tap into, and we can help you with everything that you need.
There are several resources for victims in Nashville. The YWCA Weaver Domestic Violence Shelter is the largest in the state, providing a safe place to live for women and children. The YWCA also offers crisis counseling, children's services, support groups, and a 24-hour confidential crisis and information line. The Morning Star Sanctuary provides emergency shelter and transitional counseling for adults and children, assistance with orders of protection, court advocacy, and mentoring. Morning Star also offers HOPE, a comprehensive children's program.
You have to be really brave to make that phone call, to reach out, because you have to understand, in most victims, the batterers told her, if you ever try to call, I'll kill you. And they've shown you they will kill you or your children. Once the kids come into the picture, the whole thing changes. It's way more complicated because you now threaten the kids. Or you say things like, you'll never see them again. And we know, in fact, abusers, we see that, unfortunately. We see situations where when you have those murder suicides where kids are also murdered. We're not there, but most law enforcement will tell you the kids are killed first. So she sees that.
One particular domestic violence homicide proved to be a catalyst for Captain K. Loki and subsequently the domestic violence unit. In 2011, a woman was ambushed at work by her abuser and shot to death. There had been 8 reports of serious violent episodes and 3 arrests in that case. The unit was working with her and doing all they could, but she never went to the court hearing to gain a full order of protection. Her death spurred Captain Loki to research best practices in other cities and put them into action here. A domestic violence intervention panel was formed, comprised of detectives, victim advocates, and representatives from government agencies. The panel discusses options to increase safety for victims identified at greatest risk.
Our police department, our division, is unique to other police departments. We have 4 counselors that work within our same building. So the detectives and the counselors can work together in an effort to get the offender in jail and also to get the victim's needs met. The patrol officers, the officers in the car answering the calls, they're our first responders. And it's so important that when they make that first contact, that they let her know that there is somebody on their side, there is somebody that's going to help her through this. There are resources and services for you, but we need you to help us get you there. If the officer can determine there's probable cause and she refuses to get a warrant or to prosecute or an order of protection, the officer can go down and seek the warrant on her behalf. That's important. In the 1990s, the shall part of the law came in that the officer, if there's probable cause, shall make an arrest. So it doesn't leave us very much room to not arrest. We shall.
It's a big mistake to think that everybody in our community who's suffering this crime is calling anybody. The police, legal aid, me, the Y, anybody. There's an incredible level of shame and guilt involved in this issue. It is the ugly side of our family. It's the ugly thing that happens at home. It happens in our home. It's not an easy thing to go into work the next day and tell your coworkers that you spent the night being abused by your spouse. Or for your children to go to school, they learn to lie.
Listen, I'm really sorry to do this to you, but there's no way I can come in today. I've got that stomach bug that's been going around, and I just feel terrible.
Victims often feel alone. They will not share, and they would rather, for lack of a better word, die than let you know that something's not right in their relationship.
When you have looked in the face of someone, and I have, who said, I'm going to kill you, and they mean to, you never forget that face. Fear is a great motivator of humans. It's why it's been used for as far back as we know. You want to get somebody to do something? Good Lord, it's how we train our animals. It's how you train any behavior. Fear is the unifier. The fear of ever telling one the truth. The fear of getting better. The fear of ever speaking the truth, ever saying what really happened, that you'll explode inside. I have said to people, it's okay, you can tell me. What are you afraid of? And I have heard this more than once. I'm afraid if I tell you, I will never stop crying. I'm afraid if I tell you, my heart will literally explode out of my chest.
You know, many women will just stay in the situation and not make that first call. Number one, it's their family, and they want to keep the family unit together. And then they may feel a little ashamed. You know, how come I can't keep my marriage intact? How come I can't be a better wife, a better mother? They start questioning themselves. I'm going to call the police. They're going to come to my home. My children are here. They're going to question me. They're going to question him. Someone might go to jail. Do I want my children to see that? Then I've got to go to court. Do I want to take time off from work to show up to court? It's very difficult for a victim.
A victim of domestic violence may petition a judge for an order of protection. This is a limited restraining order which stipulates specific restrictions on the person causing harm.
We see far too often as prosecutors those horrible situations where a woman has been abused and she's reached out to the police and the offender has convinced her that he loves her, that it's not going to happen again, and they lose faith in the system and they stop cooperating with us. They don't want to participate in the criminal justice system, which ties our hands. And then far too often the next phone call we get is that he's killed her. She's dead at the hands of this person that she had an opportunity to make a break from. And you know, it's a tough line that we walk because our main goal is not to break up families. That's not the focus of prosecution. The focus of prosecution is holding people accountable.
Always her best advocate when it comes to her own safety because she's the one that's been keeping herself safe. So if she told me an order of protection would only exacerbate things, would only make it worse, I would never force her.
If they do violate it, we can arrest them and take them to jail and it's 10 days. But the victims need to understand there are things that they're going to have to do in their life, you know, responsibilities that they're going to have to take to keep themselves and their families safe. And it's not a cure-all, but it's a good tool.
When you get an order of protection in Tennessee, you get issued an ex parte, which is a temporary order, and then you go to court to have the full order heard. And you have to be in the room with the person who has said, if you ever tell anybody, I'm going to kill you. So much to the frustration of police officers, all of law enforcement and advocates, you very often, a lot of times, have that 10-day period between... It's got to be within 10 days between the ex parte issue and the full order issue where a victim recants or a victim says, I don't want to do it. Well, why would that be? I don't know. I have to tell you, I have never met braver people in my entire life than many of the women I've met who have walked through our court system doors, who've walked through the doors to Mary Power Center. They are brave. They are braver than any soldier who's ever left the battlefield. To get up and finally, to get in court and face a person who has convinced you they're going to kill you, it's beyond what I could do. It's beyond what most people can do. After that, if you get your order, you live in fear. Again, we're back to that word. The fear every day of being killed because he's told you, if you ever leave me. And, you know, I think we have this image of yelling and screaming and glasses breaking and the images we see on television. But here's another image I'd like you to think about for a minute. Pillow talk. When you're being held in the arms of the person you love, where in my life it's the safest place I know, in my husband's arms. And there you are in that safe place in a quiet moment. Your children maybe are safe. And here's what's whispered into your hair. You know, if you ever leave me, I'll kill you. I cannot live without you. I'll kill myself, and I'll kill you. And I don't want to leave these babies here to take care of themselves. And then you drift off to sleep.
One thing that I've come to realize is that it's him. He wasn't lashing out at everybody else around him. It was only me. So it wasn't that he had an anger management problem. He has an abuse problem. And there's nothing I can do to fix that. I can't fix another.
Go around. Clap your hands. Come on and dance. I dig the bass.
All right, welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show.
The hardest working man in internet radio is my father, George Wilder Jr., and here he is.
All right, welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show. That was a pretty long piece on domestic violence. And I think I was even taken back by some of the victims and their experience with this epidemic. And it is an epidemic, folks. Domestic violence is an epidemic. And it can happen anywhere, to any place, to anybody. If you are in a bad relationship, whether it's your husband or your boyfriend or a friend, and these people are hitting you, kicking you, abusing you verbally, get out of it. Get out of it. That's all I can say, because, you know, I mean, guys are out here all the time in the street hunting for women to abuse. That's it. I mean, I've seen it. I've witnessed it. And I don't like it. I just don't like it. And you should not put up with it either. You love him. You hate him. You love him. You love him. I mean, it is too many times I've heard, even on national news, where guys are stalking women, they're abusing them. Police restraint does not stop these guys. The judge, they walk in front of a judge and the judge says, hey, leave her alone. Stay within 100 feet of that woman. You think he's going to do it? No way. No way is he going to do that. He's compelled to do more damage to harm that lady. And one of the things I want to say, ladies, if you constantly going back to an abuser, to someone who always abuses you, abuses your children, he's going to kill you one day. Abusers, when you are abused constantly, the abuse gets worse over time. It gets so bad that the guy will kill you. There's no doubt about it, because too many times the woman put out a restraining order on the guy. The guy knew where the woman worked, went to her workplace, pulled out a damn gun and shot her right in front of her coworkers. This has happened too many times. So I would say, if you're in an abusive relationship, get out of it. Find a way to stop going back to somebody who abuses you. Because if you go back to him and he keeps abusing you, he keeps apologizing, saying he's not going to do it again. I'm not going to do it. I'm sorry. I love you. And it just gets worse. No, I think that a woman should figure out the first sign of abuse, any kind of abuse, whether it's verbal or physical, any kind of abuse from some guy that she met or married, she should immediately get out of it. There's no doubt about it. There's no doubt. You've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. We got about 2 minutes into the show, folks. I'm going to be off for the next 3 days because I'm going to do some writing and I need a breather. We all need a breather. And I'm going to be booking some more guests, some more shows. And I love booking guests because I try to get the best there is. And if you've been following this show for the last week, you know I've had some wonderful guests on the show. And some of those guests will be back. And you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. I'm going to... We're just about off the air, folks, and please join me. Okay, I was just told in my ear I have 90 seconds. Okay, so please join me Monday. My show is on Monday through Thursday. It is so easy to say Monday through Friday. My show is on Monday through Thursday. I had to get that out. I start at 6 o'clock. I go all the way to 7:30 or maybe 8 o'clock, depends on how the show goes. But anyway, we're always on over or past an hour and a half or 2 hours on this show. So join me Monday. And you know what? Monday will be the start of a new month. It will be, I believe it will be May 2nd. Well, anyway, and if you want to know something, my birthday is on May 8th. It's it's Mother's Day, right? All right. So join me, folks, on those days, Monday through Friday, on the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. Thank you. Thank you for your time. Thank you for everything. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye, everybody. Join me Monday. I'll be back on Monday. Bye-bye.